That's very useful advice. And I want to mention that in 2004, you were named ambassador to South Korea, and then you were named ambassador of North Korea in 2005. In addition to your military background, you made 4 official visits to Pyongyang as a former director of the Southeast Asia Division and Asia Pacific South Division. Mr. Krenius, can you please discuss the significance and impact of the relationship between Canada and South Korea, along with the relationship between Canada and North Korea?
To start with South Korea, a lot of Canadian blood was spilled in South Korea during the Korean War from 1952 to 1953, when North Korea, China, invaded South Korea with the intention of taking over the entire peninsula. And Canada was a very big member of what was called the United Nations Command, which contributed troops to stop the invasion and actually push back the invaders back from whence they came. So Canada's relationship with South Korea certainly was strongly formed during that time, but the relationship actually goes back even more than 150 years. Canadian missionaries were huge influences on Korea at that time. Of course, a Korea that was not divided. So Canada's relationship was there. But fast forward to now, you have a country of South Korea that is one of the most dynamic, hardworking, democratic, and from an internet and technology point of view, one of the most plugged-in nations in the world. And both Canada and South Korea are what are considered middle powers, and as democracies with relatively the same outlook towards the world, there's a lot of potential for what would be considered a strategic partnership of doing things together, whether they're at the United Nations or in terms of, for instance, development work, working on environmental issues, challenges. We're there, and we are truly strong partners. It's interesting, one should note that there's about 10,000 Canadians, mostly young Canadians, who are actually teaching English or French in South Korea. So the people-to-people relationship is really, really important. And South Korea is one of our most important sources of foreign students who are studying in Canada, and again, forging that people-to-people understanding and relationship that is truly important. Now, here we are, a dynamic South Korea, but on the other hand, just to the north is what I would consider a very unpredictable falling state with nuclear weapons that again is the point of crisis, security crisis, and potential real, well, you can call it chaos, you can call it a real security challenge globally with that has nuclear weapons that is produced, and without technology continues to improve, and a communist regime that is truly Stalinist in nature. And again, as you mentioned, I have traveled to North Korea 4 times, and seen what's happening there. And despite all of the concerns that the global community has in terms of North Korea, I think we have to continue to try to engage them, and in some ways, the maternal health, child care, help them move away from their nasty, negative situation to something that would be certainly more predictable, and of the North Korean people, the innocents, not the military or the politicians or the leadership, but I'm talking about abused people who are North Koreans who are truly victims of their own regime. As you may know, North Korea's human rights record is among the worst world. So Canada, with other countries, have to really think through how we can resolve that very unhappy situation that exists in North Korea, and resolve it in a peaceful way that means we can get rid of North Korea's nuclear weapons. It in a peaceful way, and that's just a huge challenge that has not shown itself for easy solutions.
With over 45 years of service to Canada, how has diplomacy evolved as times have changed with continuous advancements in technology?
Well, you hit it right on. It's what has been truly amazing to see from my perspective is the speed of distribution of information. For instance, days ago, we had the terrorist bombing in Istanbul Airport, and in terms of our connected world, I happened to be on my BlackBerry looking at CBC News, and there it was almost instantaneous to know about what was happening in Istanbul, and everybody knows these days how connected world is in terms of information. And what is also interesting for me as things do continue to evolve is that there nowadays are so many alternative sources of information, and whether we're talking about the Facebook passage of information Twitter, we're indeed reading about what happened with WikiLeaks. We suddenly are just inundated instantaneously with whatever is happening in the world, anywhere, at any time. And this has led to, of course, greater public access to what used to be done, certainly in the world of diplomacy, what used to be done behind closed doors. So nowadays, even when or any country is negotiating, for instance, a free trade agreement, in our case, say, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement with so many countries in Asia, for example, the public generally already knows exactly what the state of play is, and also what's on the table in terms of the negotiation itself. This is something that before was always shrouded in deep secrecy and then kind of announced when the deal was made. Well, no longer. Now we're part of the ongoing events. And sometimes the public actually knows something even before governments do. And I'm thinking of specifically the issue of the information leaks with regard to offshore tax havens. There we go. There are journalists and organizations who tracked it down, got the information, and then, only then, passed it on to official governments. So it's amazing how everything happens so quickly. The downside, of course, of that is sometimes opinions are made perhaps in haste, and decisions taken that ultimately may be regretted. So again, for instance, what's happening in the context of the European Union and Brexit is perhaps a good example of charging forward, making a decision by referendum, totally democratically, but then perhaps then looking at the consequences of that decision and regretting the downside. So again, from a diplomat's point of view, it's a real challenge to make sure that you're on top of things and know what's going on, bearing in mind that everybody else knows what's going on at the same time, and dealing with perhaps some of the additional pressures that are there when you're trying to negotiate a treaty or a trade agreement.
And Mr. Grenius, with that being said, you have also successfully completed your bachelor's degree in economics at the Royal Military College of Canada. And you were an instructor in gunnery for air defense for the Royal School of Artillery in the UK. With your experience in diplomacy, as times have evolved, your expertise seeing the changing world of diplomacy, what would you say were some of your fondest memories from the Royal Military College of Canada before you became a diplomat?
Well, it truly was the start of change in terms of my own personal development. I mean, here I was, I think I just coming out of high school, right, 13, Ontario, and all of 17 years old going through the process, and by the time I actually stepped onto the parade square at the Royal Military College, I was 18, and both hopeful and curious, and of course a little bit fearful in terms of what the future held. And fondest memories are those of friendship, especially among my fellow classmates, that truly have lasted an entire lifetime. And for instance, two of my close friends and classmates from RMC are the godfathers of our two boys.
Oh, wow.
And coincidentally, the the godmother to both of them is also, she's a graduate of the Royal Military College, who had met my wife way before we knew each other. Both of them were studying for their MBA at the University of Ottawa. So that lifetime connection is really strong.